Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having Adam Metz. We're going to talk about The Social Concept, a book that he written that's been launched not too long ago, a few months ago. And we're going to kind of dive into the book and also talk about his business and what makes his business so special and so important. So anyway, wealth of information we're going to talk about for the next 30 minutes. And if you want to tune in, go ahead and pose a question in the chat room, or you can go ahead and call the studios at 347-324-3460. Again, at 347-324-3460. Adam, welcome to the program if you're back. Adam went to go take a coffee break for a second, and he'll be back in a moment, but kind of give you some information about his website. If you can go to socialconcept.com, again, socialconcept.com. You also can get some free clips about, I think, a lot of resources he has to offer. Also, he has a free download ebook called The Metz Way. You can take a look at that as well. And also with The Social Concept, he has some information about his consulting services and webinars, bookstore, and also his blog. Other than that, again, I guess without ado, Adam.
Yeah, hey. Good
okay,
morning.
Great. Thanks for coming back. So you got your coffee?
Yep, absolutely.
You had to get to important things. I guess to begin with, tell us about yourself. Then we'll go and say how you got started with writing this book.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I think my background in terms of how I came to social media is probably like a lot of people, which is by accident. I was a high school teacher back in Redwood City, California, right mm-hmm. outside of, near Stanford, a few minutes outside of San Francisco. And I was just, sort of your typical high school English teacher. I think I was 27 or so. Mm-hmm. And what happened was I was doing a podcast, and the podcast was about the punk rock band Jawbreaker. And it became, like, pretty popular. It got downloaded by a lot of people. This was in 2005, so, mm-hmm. gosh, 7 years ago now. And what happened was the IT director for our school district, he found me on Google, and he didn't realize that basically I was kind of well-known in the podcast world, so he asked me to teach a workshop for all the teachers on podcasting. And, I did it, and basically they all were really into it. And my dad told me, you don't have to do it for free just because you teach in that school district. And I'm like, well, Dad, what do I do? I mean, I'm on their payroll. I'm a teacher. He's like, oh, well, Adam, charge them $600 an hour. And I was like, are you serious, Dad? I'll get fired if I ask them for that. And he's like, no, you won't. Just give it a shot. And so I asked for it, and they did it. And I quit teaching 6 weeks later and became a consultant. And so for my first year, I didn't do very well. I had a company with probably the worst name ever. It was called Viper Education. It was an acronym. It stood for Video Podcast Education and Realization. This was when, everyone thought that video podcasting was kind of the wave of the future. And lo and behold, it kind of was, as YouTube is essentially a video podcasting platform.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started working with some larger clients when I began working at a company called Launch Squad in San Francisco later in 2007. And so, yeah, I got to do, I think my first big social media thing was the video for Obama Girl. That was the biggest viral video of 2007. I did that with my friend Melissa Klein and my friend Ben Rellis. And so that was a big project. That got 1.6 million views on YouTube or something. So that was probably my first large social strategy. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've worked with about 187 companies and doing their social strategy, either internal or external. So the ones that you might know, I've worked with Hershey's Chocolate. I did the social strategy for the city of San Francisco, written a social network for SAP, just a lot of different projects.
Okay, you got to tell us, now, what's the concept of Obama Girl? How did you guys come up with that concept?
Yeah, that was, I think, actually Ben Rellis' idea, from what I recall. So Ben and I go back a long ways. He and I actually went to college together at University of Wisconsin. So I've known Ben in one way or another since probably And I actually lived in the dorms with his sister. And basically, yeah, so Ben and I got back in touch because he was friends with Melissa Klein at Launch Squad, who's now at fab.com. And he came up with this idea of Obama Girl. His friend Amber Lee Ettinger served as the model. And then his other friend, Leah, I think her last name is Kaufman. She's a really good musician in the Philadelphia area. And so she came up with these cool songs. And so if you look it up on Wikipedia, it's got there's still a big old Wikipedia page on it. It's called I Got a Crush on Obama. And then there's like a whole series of them, and they all have, you know, it's really like quite detailed, but it was one of the biggest early viral videos. I guess they found the director of it on Craigslist, which turned into an entire channel called Barely Political, which mm-hmm. was acquired by Next Nick Networks, which was acquired by YouTube. And Ben is today, you know, he's at he's at YouTube.
Wow, tell us, what is social media?
What is it? Wow. Okay. Now we're going back to the big picture, huh? Well, I guess the way I've always defined it, to keep things simple, it's any channel by which a consumer can go and talk to another consumer without any third party interfering. So that would be, you know, talking about, you know, a company, talking about really anything without any sort of third party interference, usually a digital channel, so not like the telephone.
You know, we're talking about the regular traditional media. You think the traditional media, rather, radio, television, and print newspaper, are they kind of fading by the wayside, or they really need to adapt to this new platform?
Well, I mean, if you take a look in sort of your geographic area, like you're in Texas, where there's a huge tradition of daily newspapers over the last 200 years. You know, I think Texas was probably actually where some of the best papers in the country still are, like Dallas and Houston. And you'll notice that the number of daily newspapers in the country that are still in existence has really faded. All the two newspaper towns have now become one newspaper towns or non-newspaper towns. And the same thing has happened even here in the Bay Area, which has, you know, always been a very kind of literary part of the country. So, you know, the ones who are surviving in terms of readership are the ones who are adapting, like, you know, the ones who are developing iPad apps and things like that to make it so their content can still be devoured quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The other sources, I mean, you know, radio listenership had been dropping for years prior to social media, so this is just sort of making it a little tougher for them. And, you know, newspaper readership had also been dropping for years prior to social media, so it's not to say that social media, you know, massacred newspapers and radio, but it certainly made a bad situation for them worse.
So even, for example, people want things when they want it. They necessarily don't want to stick to traditional programming. If we want to watch CSI, not necessarily after like watching it or spending the time. I might be busy at 8 p.m. on a Thursday night. I want to watch when I want to watch it, and it can be at 2 o'clock in the morning or 1 o'clock in the morning, or I might watch on the train.
This whole notion of place shifting and time shifting started a very, very long time ago. I mean, mm-hmm. even when I was a kid in the early 80s, I mean, it was called VHS and beta videos. And I mean, video in one form or another has been around since the early 70s. So the whole notion of switching the venue at which you watch something or the time at which you watch it, that's existed for a long time. But the whole idea of, you know, normal people like you and me being able to create content, that started, you know, in the 1970s and 80s with public access television,
mm-hmm.
which then kind of grew in the age of the BBSs, you know, bulletin board services, you know, in computers in the 90s, and then, you know, YouTube came along in 2005. So it's pretty interesting.
What do you think the impact really of Twitter and Facebook has been within this new social revolution in the last 5 years?
Well, I mean, politically speaking, it's been pretty transparent. It's been pretty easy to see. I mean, if you look at, you know, Egypt and, you know, all these countries that have undergone tremendous social change just, you know, in the last 6 months or so, that's been a pretty huge impact. But as far as, you know, how people spend their time, I think that's probably the biggest deal in terms of, you know, saying, wow, if you look at, you know, the average teenager 10 years ago spent 2 hours a day watching television, and now they're spending that same amount of time on Facebook. And of course the advertisers migrate to wherever that is. Just like, you know, if the advertisers sponsored the radio in 1940 and then they sponsored rock bands in the 1960s. So,
wow.
You know, the advertisers need to just go and follow the money.
And we start diving a little bit more, talking about your particular book, how did you come up with the title?
The Social Customer? Well, it's the new book, you mean?
The new book, The Social Concept.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I'm like working on my third book right now. Which book? Which book? So The Social Customer, we came up with a title for that. It must have been about a year and a half ago. My agent, Ethan, and I were just kind of debating, you know, what the topic was going to be. And he's like, well, this is all about, you know, customers from the social internet. I'm like, yeah, that's why I think I want to call it The Social Customer, because I think the customer is the profile of who the customer is, regardless of your industry, has profoundly changed.
Mm-hmm. So how you think about the what's the big changes with the customers, the way they buy things or where they interact? Kind of explain to us how this revolution works. It's not the traditional way of doing things. The great part of this is because they have to interact with one another. And if you don't interact, that's mean they don't see you or, you know.
Because, I mean, even in just in the last – let's just take a look at how the customer's changed just in the last 5 or 6 years even, not speaking very, very long term, but, like, let's just turn back the clock a little bit to, like, maybe 2007 or 2008, you know, prior to when a lot of people were, say, on Facebook, YouTube, all those platforms and things like that. The customer's spending their day in very different ways, and the customer now has access at the point of purchase to information that they never had before. So, you know, one of the top activities now in a retail environment is when someone's in a retail store, they're actually checking their phone and comparing prices. That was something that didn't even happen 5 years ago. So you've got customers, say, you know, at Target or Costco or wherever, who are wondering, could I drive 5 blocks down the street and get those jeans for like $20 less? So that's an entirely new behavior. The other thing is, in the selection process for a business-to-business sale, the very first place that most people go prior to, you know, 5 years ago was search. So if, let's say you were looking to get a new machine for your business. Let's say you're buying a new server, computer, or something like that. First place you go is Google. Type in, you know, are compact servers any good? Today, that's kind of changed. Now people are going, you know, straight to social. They're going to Twitter. They're doing social searches to evaluate what their colleagues and friends think.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that's just a sort of a critical shift in customer behavior. And so for the brands and companies that are not willing to engage in, you know, in these channels and platforms, they're simply missing, you know, an opportunity to really either mitigate resistance to their brand or to get a sale.
How has Wall Street has been dealing with this and the whole – do they understand it? You know, remember the dot-com boom of the late 90s. I said, this is going to revolutionize the world. Do you think this is going to crash and burn one of these days, or is it going to take us to another level that we really can't comprehend?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Like, are we headed for, like, another dot-com crash? I mean, you know, when you look at the performance of social media companies, you know, over, say, you know, in the stock market and things like that, there have been some really positive situations, but there have been some very bad ones. I mean, this Facebook IPO a few weeks ago was not only bunk, but Facebook's performance since the IPO has been rough. On the other hand, you know, you have companies like Salesforce.com who just completed a $600 million social media acquisition of Buddy Media. You know, their stock, the performance in the long term, I think it's, for the most part, been fairly well. Their ticker is CRM, as I recall. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the companies that are investing in social now, I mean, the brands that I can think of off the top of my head that have been doing robust investments, Oracle, for sure. And generally speaking, they've performed rather strongly with investors. So you're seeing these multi-billion-dollar, multinational, global corporations that previously maybe you knew for software or hardware, they're now throwing a ton of money at social. So that's how this has really changed quite a bit.
Do they really understand it, or are they just jumping on the bandwagon?
That's a separate ball of wax, man. that's a good question. I think it depends on the organization. I mean, I think at this point, yeah, I do think Salesforce understands social. I think they really do get it now. Oracle, I think, was a little bit later to the ball, but they've done some very strategic acquisitions. They just bought a social company called Vitru. They've integrated Right Now, who are part of the sort of a customer experience suite.
Mm-hmm.
So I say even the ones that have a lot of cash that may not understand it are getting closer and closer every day.
Okay.
And I think in terms of the growth curve that we're in right now, for, you know, I think this whole growth curve towards social media started around 2008. We're probably in the fourth year, and I think we've got, you know, 5 or 6 more years to go.
Okay.
This is just sort of commonplace in the business world.
Well, we're going to take a break real quick. We'll be back in 1 minute talking with Adam Metz, The Social Concept.
You're listening to The Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet.
Well, we're back with Adam Metz. We're talking about the social concept. Adam, when you actually thought about putting all of this together, I have a question right here from somebody. They say, what's in the water of that particular region? Why they're so innovative? Which is really a good question. If you look at towards this entire country, and each region produces certain things, what is it with the West Coast and that one little region of the world who's controlling our whole country, really controlling our whole world with social media?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because there's actually really some excellent social media companies that are nowhere near here. So, like, when I think of, something like, New York, I think of Buddy Media, that company that just got acquired by Salesforce. Like, they're a great social media company, and they're, downtown New York City. And, I think of even, like, Alterian. We're a very good British-owned social media company that were based out of Chicago. So I don't think, all the social media brain trust is from here. Mm-hmm. And even the first blogger, from what I know, is from Ohio. So, I don't think we have any kind of, like, geographic exclusive here. But that said, there is a proliferation of just innovative companies out here in general. Apple started just down the road from here, Google as well. And, I think the reason that social media maybe has proliferated so much here, this has been such an environment, is because the idea of universities that really foster this kind of innovation. Like, I think Facebook, sure, it may have been born at Harvard, but I think the reason it grew up, if you will, at Stanford was because, the idea of, like, all-night hackathons and things like that, that developer spirit is really alive and well here. And I think it's, the West Coast has always just been a little weird, and that really is a pretty good thing for innovation. I mean, if you think of all the cool bands that came out of Los Angeles and San Francisco, it's for the same reason. It's just an interesting and innovative environment. And it's also there's obviously a ton of, venture capital money here too. So it's, if you've got a good idea, it's not that hard to get, maybe a few $100,000 of angel investment so that you can at least try it out for a year.
Wow. So tell us about, in theory, what's the social concept is all about, your new book?
Oh, so the company is called The Social Concept, and then the book is called The Social Customer. So the new book is all about how companies can work using social CRM tools and software to get followers and fans and friends, and to monetize them, and then retain those fans and followers and turn them into what I would call premier customer relationships. So these are customers that don't just buy one time. They're not like the people that buy a Groupon and never show up again. Instead, mm-hmm. they're the customers that come once and then keep returning, which is the best kind.
So in your book, in your table of contents, you talk about the brand as a social object and the business.
Yeah.
Tell us
about that. Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. That's sort of like a real fundamental premise that, when a company says, we want to do social media, you're like, okay, well, that's good. Everybody wants to do it. Do you want to be a social object? Meaning, do you want your brand to be something that numerous people are going to be engaging with on a daily basis? And because that's very resource intensive. That takes, in a normal sized company, 3 to 24 people. And so, if you're trying to increase, how much value people get from your company or from your brand, in a social channel, then mm-hmm. you're going to need to adequately staff and resource it and, say, be able to respond to your customers in real time, within an hour or so. You'll need to use some software to synthesize all of their the social customer's data, and then you're going to need to have a strategic engagement model around your social customers.
Well, for a small business, that's really very difficult. It's almost with today, you're on duty 24 hours a day. You don't ever get any rest. And it is in your best interest that you actually look on your social media and your reviews every hour. So if something does happen or some bad review happened, that you'd be able to address that immediately. If not, you just talk about viral. I mean, it just can. It's like a venom. It would just really destroy you.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of small businesses find, you know, being a social object extremely overwhelming. I mean, they're just trying to be competent at being businesses, at running their restaurant or their, whatever their small company is, and that's why social media is not necessarily a great fit for, you know, every company. On the other hand, I mean, there are basic tools you can use. Like, you know, there's a company called Sprout Social out of Chicago. They make a great piece of social media software that's $9 a month, and you can use it to really assess, you know, what people are saying about you on a minute-to-minute basis. And, yeah, sure, maybe you can't afford to check it every hour, but maybe you could check it, say, once a day, and then reach out to anyone who's talking to you once a day.
What advice would you give a small business who's looking to launch their own social media? Of course, they need to have a Facebook account. They need to have a Twitter account. Anything?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
I mean,
okay.
No, it depends really where the audience is first. I mean, there's sort of an acronym, you know, that I would recommend that people jot down if they're trying to figure out, okay, how should we strategically address social media? And so that acronym is called LPostum. So the L stands for listening. The P stands for people. The O stands for objectives. The S stands for strategy. And then the T stands for tools, and the M is the last part, and that stands for measurement. So the idea here is that the first thing you want to do when you're forming a strategy is you just want to listen, and so listen to all conversation about your company, and then additionally listen to all conversation that's basically about your entire industry or your space. So then after that, you want to figure out, okay, who are the people we're trying to reach? And the reason I sort of question Tim, you know, your idea, oh, do we need a Facebook page? It's because I don't actually know if, you know, the clients of that company are going to be on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you that. I'd have to look at who the people are. Then after that, we'd want to figure out, okay, you know, what's the business objective here? Are we trying to get net new customers? Are we trying to cross-sell customers? Are we trying to fire customers even, which does happen sometimes? And then... No, I mean, seriously, I've seen social strategies aimed at getting rid of customers.
Wow.
Yeah. So then we figure out, you know, okay, what's the strategy? And so we formally write the strategy. After that, pick the tools. And then noticing that the tools is kind of last. It's not an early stage activity when you're forming a social strategy. And then the last part is to measure. And you measure usually daily.
Okay. That's
how I do it.
Okay. Also, you're talking about what's the relationship management with your customer. What type of relationship you should have with your customer? Maybe should you be formal? Kind of explain that. Or can you be carefree?
It depends. It depends on the brand. I mean,
Okay.
It depends on what it is you're in the business of doing. Like, I mean, yeah, sure, if it's TGI Fridays, I guess, I think their value proposition is that they are carefree. On the other hand, if it's, you know, Charles Schwab, carefree, that probably wouldn't work so well for them. So, you know, it's like, I think of the tagline, what's TGI Fridays? It's something like, in here it's always Friday. Like, yeah, I mean, of course that's going to work. But if it's not in line with, you know, sort of the unique value proposition of the company, whereas,
mm-hmm.
you know, Charles Schwab, you know, they're known for sort of pragmatism, reliability, you know, sort of, you know, online trading and investment for the last 2 billion years, or, you know, it's sort of the everyman's investment firm. That same attitude is not going to work. So it just depends about the company.
Okay. And also you kind of talk about social sales. How can a person actually make money off of selling socially?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Yeah, because there's so many sales professionals who are simply missing hours, probably 2 or 3 hours per day, and they're selling, and they don't even know it. They don't even know what they're missing. Here's the reason: most prospecting that you used to have to do, say, on the weekends, or you know, in any method that you would have done, downloading lists from Ubers or whatever, that can now be done using social sales tools like InsideView. And these social sales tools are very, very good pieces of software, and they're pretty cheap, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say the average social – in fact, InsideView has a free version. If you want, you can tweet me, and I'll send it to you, or you can go to their website.
What's it called again?
It's called InsideView. Okay. InsideView. Yeah, they're one of my oldest clients and a very good company. And I've been using their product every day for 5 years now. And what it does is it makes lists of the people you need to be following. It follows them for you, and it helps you strategically target folks that you would like to do business with. And it sends you alerts on them every day.
Oh, wow.
So I found it to be hugely useful. And, you know, you can also be detecting key business events. Like, let's say, you know, one of your clients merges with another company, one of your clients launches a new product, does a new property acquisition, has a corporate challenge like operational turbulence. You know, you name it, and this thing will track it.
Okay.
That's why I really love it. And so it just helps me stay, you know, abreast of everything I need to stay abreast of. And it helps me do social selling. Then it helps me also figure out, how do I get in touch with that person? So here's an example. I wanted to get in touch with a young woman named Kara from a PR firm in New York. I was thinking of doing a business development deal with her company. I didn't know her, but she went to college with one of my new clients. And I saw on Twitter, using this software, that she was looking for I think she was having trouble hiring a new person. She was
mm-hmm.
wondering when they were going to get back to her about this job offer she had extended. So I sent her one of my new clients' hiring systems, and she was like, "Really? Wow! Thank you. That's awesome." And then I said, "Hey, I'm going to be in New York in a week. You want to go get lunch?" And she said, "Absolutely."
Wow, this is really social. Wow.
So yeah, I mean, it was you give value first, and then you know, just reach out to people. I think generally people are pretty receptive.
Okay. Regarding social innovation and product development,
sure.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I mean, the whole notion of developing products with your customers is something that's been done for about a decade now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think this is something that had been happening before social media, but social media just kind of was like it was almost like WD-40. It just made it so much easier to do it so much faster. Like, this is pretty cool. I have a client that's moving to a new office. They're a company of about 300 people. It's a software company. And they're moving to a new office where it's going to be a way bigger office. And it's the first time they've ever moved in the whole existence of the company. They're trying to figure out what to have, you know, in the new office, whether they should have, you know, rooms for moms who might be nursing, or maybe some solar-powered parking panels to generate solar power for their building.
Mm-hmm.
And the question you got to ask yourself is, how do you have a brainstorm with 300 people?
Oh, my gosh.
And I mean, 300 is not that big of a number. I suppose you could get 300 people and put them all in the same, you know, meeting room and be like, all right, people, let's brainstorm here. But what they're doing is they have what's called an idea storm, and that's it's sort of a social media brainstorm, and that lets them, and collaboratively in the last 2 weeks, they've thought of probably, I think, 100 great ideas for the new office, and they've ranked them in order of importance. And so the question is, like, how would you remake the Honda Civic for women who are 5'5", who may be like the average drivers of it? Well, talk with, I don't know, 10,000 of them. Let them help you. I mean, Starbucks kind of proved the first use case of this. They made an idea innovation project on social media a few years back. It was called My Starbucks Idea. Did
mm-hmm.
you remember that one?
Yes.
And so that gave birth to some pretty cool things. That gave birth to the Starbucks card. That gave birth to those little green thingies that they stick in the coffee so you don't get coffee all over your shirt when you're carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was, as a guy who spilled, you know, Starbucks all over myself a lot of times. That
I'm with you there.
Cool. It's still up and running today. If you go to mystarbucksidea.com, you'll see sort of all the different kind of ideas that they have about, you know, Starbucks. They've also, like, talked about some really interesting stuff. Like, there's an idea that's getting a lot of votes right now. It's about having late-night Starbucks locations near hospitals because nurses, you know, the night shift nurses start at 11 p.m. So it's... It's pretty interesting stuff.
Wow. Also, what is the best social media CRM tool that you can use? I know you mentioned one earlier that can be used for another product, like Social Sprout.
Oh, sure.
Is there some others that can integrate with a CRM? And you can have a platform like Hootsuite that can kind of keep that information all together or integrate?
Yeah, which platform would I recommend? Well, there's the idea of social media monitoring, and Hootsuite, from what I understand, is a free product that does social media monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have an enterprise project. I've never actually tried it. Don't really know much about Hootsuite. I think it's, from what I've seen, it's something used by small businesses. I think there are a few larger companies that may use their enterprise product, but I've yet to look at it. As far as something that's a full-scale social CRM platform, I would probably look at a large CRM that does have a social component. So maybe something like Oracle CRM On Demand plus Buzzient, maybe Salesforce plus Radiant 6, perhaps Infusionsoft plus Sprout Social. So there's a number of ways to do it, but usually you'd need to couple a social media monitoring platform to a CRM platform, but I don't think Hootsuite would be an appropriate solution for that.
Okay, but some other. Okay, great. But social.
But there's six or seven others that I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay. Can you name six others? I think you mentioned Oracle has one as well.
Yeah, so Oracle CRM On Demand plus a product called Buzzient. They're pretty great. They're one of our older clients. Then Salesforce plus their product Radiant 6 and Buddy Media. Those two products are definitely going to be a good combo. You could use Sprout Social plus perhaps Infusionsoft. You could combine maybe even Marketo, Salesforce, and Radiant 6 as well. Even HubSpot plus Infusionsoft could do it. So usually you're looking at combining two pieces of software in order to do it, but you can definitely get some pretty good results from that.
Okay. That's another question regarding misunderstood failures, and then we already talked about analytics, and we're going to read something about your book. Let's take a break real quick, and then we can talk about misunderstood and failures in social CRM. Be back in one moment.
You bet.
Okay.
You're listening to The Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida, is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet.
Oh, we're all back again. I guess we're going to continue with Adam regarding, I guess, the social concept, his company, and talking about his book, The Social Customer. Going back to the misunderstandings and failures in CRM, can you talk about that in your book?
Oh, you bet.
Okay.
So you're speaking, Tim, specifically of the kind of misunderstandings around social CRM or particular failures within, you know, the actual, you know, history of companies who tried to do it. You mean this?
Actually, both. I mean, that's a good.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, actually, both.
You bet. So, you know, I think there's seven big things that I think, you know, companies don't quite understand about social CRM. So I think, yeah, let's just kind of make the laundry list first because they're all pretty clear. So the first one is, I think, and some of this actually came from a book that was one of the first CRM books that was any good. It was by this Australian chap named Francis Buttle. It was written maybe 6-7 years ago, but it still reads fairly well. So the first thing I think people think is that CRM is like database marketing. That's definitely not it at all. It's, you know, database marketing is, you know, what happens when a brand takes customer data and then hopes to send them targeted offers, whereas CRM is managing the entire relationship with that customer. And then, which is leads to sort of another mistaken assumption, which is that CRM is a marketing process, because, you know, it's not. It's CRM is a customer lifecycle management process. So it's marketing maybe, you know, a fifth of it, but that ain't it. And then a lot of people think, because in the old days, the IT department used to implement the CRM system, that CRM is an IT issue.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not an IT issue. In fact, I would say at this time in history, the IT team has the least to do with CRM that they ever have. In fact, I've seen a few CRMs, that have never even touched the IT team. And then there's a couple other mistaken assumptions, which is like CRMs about loyalty programs. You know, if you think of like a frequent flyer program,
mm-hmm.
you know, your favorite airline, sure, you may be in that and you may be in their CRM system, but CRM and loyalty, that's not it. Like, maybe the loyalty program might be 10% of it, but that's not CRM. And then there's what's probably the most fatal misconception, is that any company can implement CRM. That's absolutely not true. I'd say a CRM implementation fails 40 to 50% of the time. So if it's not done extremely carefully, it will definitely fail. And the problem is not the technology or the process. The problem usually lies with people and political and cultural impediments. And, you know, people may single out CRM and say, oh, CRM efforts fail all the time. It's not that. It's you know, about 50% to 70% of all organizational change efforts fail all the time, and it's usually because of poor organizational change management.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one last sort of misconception around it is that social CRM is social media. It's not necessarily that at all. Social CRM can include social media, but they're not interchangeable. And then the last sort of mistaken assumption there is that social CRM should be owned by marketing and PR teams in a company, which is it doesn't. Social CRM, when done right, usually does not have any one functional owner. It's usually owned by maybe 6 or 7 different teams.
I follow. Okay. If a person is looking to hire a social media company or looking to hire one social media person within a company, what do they need to look for?
Wow, that's a big question. I guess my question to your question, sorry to do this, but is well, what's the business objective?
Okay.
Hiring a social media person to do what?
So I guess to expand your marketing. I mean, like, for example, most companies want to jump on the bandwagon but don't want to do it. And I think you mentioned something at the very top of the show about kind of a needs assessment. I think it's LPO.
Sure.
Yeah.
L Postum. That's definitely a good.
So they should use that as a tool first, what they want to accomplish.
Yes. So yeah. So for, you know, let's say you were using this social media or social CRM just for marketing. Let's say that was your use case. There's about 7 or 8 different things you could do with social media, but that's one that's been real popular. I think the other use cases are getting nearly as popular these days.
Mm-hmm.
How do you vet, you know, what this person has done? Well, first I'd just look at their past experience. And just say to them, hey, you know, can you let's take a look at the numbers from your past projects. And if they say what, then that's a very, very bad sign. So I would just ask them to show you the metrics from projects that they worked on in the past. And let's say they don't have any. Fair enough. That's understandable. Maybe you're interviewing someone who's very young or junior or doesn't have a lot of experience. Then you could say to them, okay, well, you know, obviously I'm not asking you to do, you know, our entire strategy sitting right here in this interview room, but, you know, why don't you interview me for 5 or 10 minutes and then make an initial strategic recommendation as to how you would solve our problem, just so you could see how that consultant's mind works or how that prospective employee's mind works around social.
Mm-hmm.
And if they, you know, immediately say, oh, well, it would be this tool and this tool, well, that's generally a pretty bad candidate. So what I would be looking for is the right strategic thinking, and because the tools are always going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Facebook's real popular right now. Twitter's real popular right now. I don't know if they're going to be really popular in 8 years. It's possible. But to just answer and say, we need a Facebook strategy, I think that's really kind of flip and possibly dangerous. I think you really need to assess where the set of customers is. And to do this correctly really does take a bit of research.
Lastly, you have here the social customer and the law, which I thought was really interesting. That chapter
was really difficult to write. That took a ton of research, and I was fortunate enough to chat with Glenn Manishin, who was he's a lawyer who's actually been litigating in that Google case. He wrote this PowerPoint called Managing Legal Risks in Social Media, and that PowerPoint is like one of the most useful PowerPoints I've seen in my entire life.
Wow.
Yeah, that thing is, if your company is doing social media on a big scale, you need to memorize that presentation. I think it's great.
And that presentation is available online?
You bet, yeah. There's a link in the book there. You can just download the whole thing. I think in the book there's probably 300 download links. You got to look for the little end notes there, and then you just type it into your browser, and boom, grab them right there.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's basically the beginning of that chapter is all about, you know, the 10 or 12 things you need to know in order to manage legal risks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's five or six really key pieces of legislation, that, like the Children's Online Privacy Act and the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And it's just sort of like it describes each of them in a nutshell, and it tells you how not to break that law, which is a pretty important thing to know.
Wow.
And then it gives you sort of the info you need to go to your legal team and say, okay, you know, legal team, here's what you need.
Okay. Let's go back to your company itself. Just talk about the type of consulting services your company offer at the
Social
Concept.
Sure, yeah, so we're sort of a company that does two different things. So we do large scale, you know, social customer relationship management consulting. So we've worked with 187 companies now to help them do their social and their marketing automation and you know, social lead generation. And so right now we work with a big insurance company upstate New York, a big software company in Arizona. It's about, I don't know, 40 or 50 different clients right now, some in more of a coaching manner and others in a consulting manner. And then additionally, we work with about 10 or 20 different social media agencies and public relations firms. And what we do with them is we train them to sell really excellent social media software so that they can drive more revenue with their clients. So we train them to sell brands like HubSpot and Marketo and certainly Infusionsoft. And Sprout Social, things like that. So we have webinars every week both to train companies how to sell social media software and then to train other companies, like more like companies or brands, how to achieve success with social media. And if people want to sign up for any of these, it's pretty easy. You can just go to our website, and there's actually a little kind of a gift card on the top left-hand corner at thesocialconcept.com,
mm-hmm.
and you can get yourself a free bronze subscription. And that will actually give you access to, I think it's about a 7-hour audio course that you'll get over the course of about 7 weeks. And there's quite a few MP3s there. I make a lot of audio just so people can listen to it in their cars or on their iPods and things like that. And I think you can download a couple free chapters from the new book, too.
Wow. And where can we get the book?
The book's pretty much anywhere. I'd say you walk into Barnes & Noble, or if you order it on Amazon, you'll probably get it tomorrow. It seems to ship real quick. And it's on the Kindle and the Barnes & Noble Nook, too. So the first book is called There Is No Secret Sauce. The new one is called The Social Customer, and that's more of a guide to social CRM. And then the third book is coming out, I think, late this year. It's going to be called Seed Nurturing, and that's a sort of the definitive guide to social demand generation. So there's sort of a series of them, I guess.
Okay.
And then you can listen to the audio version of a good half hour of the book for free. It's on the website at thesocialconcept.com.
Perfect. And if a person is looking to get in this particular industry, what should they get as in credentials or to read or even partner with a company? What should they do?
That's a great question. That's seriously one of the best interview questions that I've heard in about a year. Nobody asked that question. And it's a question I get asked, you know, sort of in private at the end of a lot of conferences and speaking
mm-hmm.
engagements. But, yeah, nobody ever asks me that in an interview. What I would do if I were, say, 20 years old or maybe even mid-career and wanted to transition over to this
mm-hmm. –
read like five or six great books on the subject. That right away for less than $100 will get you sort of really up to speed. I'd say probably take my audio course. It doesn't cost anything. So that's kind of a good, and just, you know, listen to it when you're driving around in the car and you can hear all these vendors talking about their stuff. After that, I would start a blog where, you know, you can really engage with other experts in the industry. And after that, I would try and maybe just get one or two clients to let you do, maybe small companies, to let you do social strategy for them so you can just get some hands-on experience. Once you've done that, then I think it's maybe 6 months later or whatever, then it's time to start possibly looking for work in social CRM. But I think at first, read some books, listen to a lot of podcasts, get a couple of tiny clients, and then kind of rock and roll from there.
Okay. And which books, besides your book, you know, what other books they need to really have in the library?
Yeah, that's a cool one. We actually have a little bookstore. I get asked that question a lot. So if you go to tinyurl.com/metzbooks, again, that's tinyurl.com metsbooks, you'll see some of my favorites in the space, and I'll tell you the few that I think would be a good fit for what to read. So my two books are there. They're both about $15. The next one is in green. It's called Serum, The Speed of Light. It's a dynamite book. I would definitely read that. That's by my friend and mentor, Paul Greenberg. The one after that I would read is probably a book called Groundswell. It's by my friend Charlene Lee. That's a really good book. Those three, and probably The Fifth Discipline by Peter Senge. I really, really like that one. Those four, I think, is a great place to start. And then perhaps just to make it so that you can sell your own work, I would say possibly Proactive Selling by Skip Miller, just to teach you how to sell your own services, because that, I think, is one of the best sales books I've ever read. So all those put together, I think you'd be in pretty good shape.
Perfect. Well, how can we contact you again? Your website, your telephone number, email?
Yeah, I'm pretty easy guy to find. Just go to the website. It's thesocialconcept.com. And then if you want to hit me on Twitter, my Twitter name is TheMetz, T-H-E-M-E-T-Z. And we, of course, have that customer community, so feel free to join it. When you go to the website, you'll see your free membership card there. And there's, I think, 1,200 or 1,300 marketing experts in there. And you can download things for free and talk on we have sort of little forums in there that you can kind of chat with other marketing professionals in. There's no advertising or anything, so it's kind of a pretty low-key place to hang out and learn.
Wow. Well, Adam, I really appreciate you coming on. I'm going to ask you to read something from your book and kind of close things out. And the last question I'm going to ask you, where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Wow. I feel like I'm graduating high school here. So 10 years from now, I think most likely, I think I'm going to continue in the direction of training great smaller businesses like, you know, these PR firms and social media firms we work with, teaching them how to sell software to be independent, and then probably just doing a lot of speaking and writing. I think probably my consulting days will be ending in the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
That's the one. So I think the one the part that would be fun to read would be something from Social Advertising, Chapter 18 here, just because I think we've all had it on our brains lately as Buddy Media was acquired by Salesforce this week. So this is a teeny bit from the chapter called Social Advertising, the Social Mobile Platform and Integration with Retail. So, and this is, it's very appropriate because the Mad Men just had their season finale the other night. So as the social customer begins to dictate how advertising works, the ad industry, which is usually thought of as a Madison Avenue institution, has begun to geographically spread out to places like Silicon Valley and Hollywood. If you had told Mad Men's Don Draper in 1965 that there would have been a 200-person advertising network in Los Angeles and ad agencies beginning to recognize Cupertino and Palo Alto, California as important destinations in the advertising world, he probably would have laughed at you. Well, a lot's changed in 40-odd years. Now that you need to understand the scenarios, the models, and the metrics, you need to figure out how to advertise and reach the social customer at every touch point. So basically, what we're now looking into is what's called the social advertising space. And so before we go deep into any one technology, you might want to step back and consider the whole social advertising space. And so what we did in that part of the book is we brought Kevin Barenblatt, who was the CEO of this cool social media management and marketing company called Context Optional, and they were purchased by Adobe. And so there's this stat that I think we should wrap up with that's kind of cool. It says that analyst firms like Forrester, and this is Kevin Barenblatt speaking here, analyst firms like Forrester suggest that one-third of marketers will spend more on social marketing in 2010 than 2009, and an additional 30% will invest in it over the next year, Barenblatt said. So it's obvious that social ad spend and social marketing space is growing fast, and it turned out that when you look back, Barenblatt actually underestimated the numbers a little bit. So, you know, just this space is growing faster. I'm done reading now. This space is growing faster than people even thought it was, you know, just 2 years ago and 3 years ago. It's outpacing even their predictions. So, you know, to play catch up, now would be a good time, just so you can kind of learn the best practices, the metrics, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just sort of you know, our best recommendation at this time. It just in order to in order to make yourself, you know, competitive in the business world, this is definitely the time to start competing.
Well, thank you, Adam. I really appreciate you coming in and talking about the social customer from your company, The Social Concept. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Sam. Yeah, okay. We look forward to tweeting it out later today.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This has been another production of Apple Capital Group, the show. You can download this episode on iTunes on Blog Talk Radio. Everybody have a good day and take care.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.